All right, thanks very much, Jeff. I always like pointing out ironies with corporates and some of the claims and things, and Amanda's mentioning of AMP signing up for the UNPRI. I used to like it back in about 2003, before they sold Stanbroke and demerged Henderson in the UK, where at the same time AMP was running the world's largest screened investment fund, largest ethical investment fund out of Henderson in the UK. At the same time, they were the world's biggest land clearer through Stanbroke, and particularly their Queensland operations in clearing trees. So sometimes you can get these ironies. Equally, I usually take up with AMP each year the fact that they still have the James Hardie chairman on their board, and point out the irony of having the chairman of the biggest industrial killer on the board of Australia's biggest life insurer. And, you know, it's a bit of an odd combination. So. Look, I thought I'd run you through a few corporate situations on sort of reputational damage, social responsibility, and then bring it back to the business ethics greed question, which Amanda mentioned. I've just been at the Toll Holdings AGM this morning, which was probably the most remarkable AGM I've ever been to, in terms of basically completely skewering a company over outrageous greed. And I'll take you through the details a bit later, but you'll see it late line business tonight, all over the papers tomorrow. It was an incredible situation that emerged at that meeting. Firstly, the Guns AGM was on today in Launceston. I didn't get there, but I got to do a little 5-minute scene setter on ABC Tasmania, just to try and annoy the board from across the Tasman. And obviously Guns is a great example of a company which, my view, has completely mismanaged their sort of social responsibility, stakeholder dealings, to the detriment of their shareholders in a financial sense. Dick Pratt got a pulp mill up in Tumut and had the Green Group's honours consultants. Okay? And you didn't read much about it at all, did you? John Gay only knows warfare and headbutting with his critics. So he's the only company that bans the press from attending the AGM. He thinks it's all right to pay for renovations on the Premier's house. He thinks it's all right to be executive chairman. He thinks it's all right to sue all his critics, including Bob Brown, and sacking 5 PR firms in 3 years, and being just basically a belligerent guy who had a pretty ignorant perspective, which was the union's on side, Lennon's on side, Howard likes it, stuff everyone else, it'll work. Well, now he's trying to get a project up with a new Premier who's not in his back pocket, with a new government who, in their heart of hearts, would rather it go away, and a credit market which is constrained, and a company whose market cap has fallen to $670 million from more than $2 billion, and which now doesn't have the capital to get the project up, let alone the reputation to have confidence from its counterparties and stakeholders and everything else. So a case study of mismanagement, and now universally regarded Guns as being sort of, you know, unethical. You know, I recommended them as a buy the other day in Crikey at $1.08 and got all these abusive emails. You know, it's just how not to do it. James Hardie, probably the worst scandal we've ever had in reputational terms, just attempting to flip into a structure and lose the tail of the liabilities. I was at the Amalgamated Holdings AGM last week in Sydney in the beautiful State Theatre. She's on the board, Meredith Helicar, so I was there again. Don't think we should have her on the board. Not a good look when ASIC is taking proceedings against 10 James Hardie directors and we're soldiering on as if nothing's happened. And I went to the Hardie AGM a couple of months ago. Why haven't you changed your name yet? Well, everyone knows us in the US as Hardie Board, so we think we shouldn't change our name. And basically just completely mishandled the whole issue of being honest and open about your liabilities, and probably suffered the greatest corporate brand damage we've ever seen in Australia. And now they've only got 2 Australians on their board, the rest of them Americans, because no one will work for them. And their general manager is an English guy as well. So they have to pay a big premium to market to attract staff, executives, directors, you name it, because their name is so tarnished. A couple of companies which aren't so much on the register for being blackened names, but I'm flagging, I guess, today that I think they will increasingly suffer some hits. Woolies, Australia's largest poker machine operator. They run 11,000 poker machines. I asked about this at their AGM last year, and the CEO replied with basically a series of comments which were completely inaccurate, claiming about all their safe gaming practices and this sort of stuff. There's a guy called Paul Bendit, who's the son of Jack Bendit. Jack Bendit is a $600 million rich lister who built most of the Woolworths supermarkets in WA, was Kerry Stokes' long-term partner in regional shopping centre developments dating back to the 1960s. Paul Bendit is a sort of a rich philanthropist type, is taking on Woolworths. He's got a website, pokeyact.org. He's trying to orchestrate consumer boycotts. And I mean, my daughter, my four-year-old daughter, has given him the grab for his ad, which he's trying to flog to GetUp, which is to keep children out of pokies venues. So Paul and I will both be going to the Woolies AGM in Melbourne on November 27, and running some pretty strong arguments about, why aren't you running Safeway brothels? I mean, brothels are illegal. Why aren't you doing that? I mean, your approach is, it's legal, we can do it. And your practices, as evidenced by Paul Bendit's website, and he's been to 100 venues, he's taken photographs, he's compared them with all the codes of practice, he's compared them with all the rules, they're not lifting a finger in terms of responsible gaming. And my prediction is that I think Woolies will have to demerge and get out of the pokies industry, or they're going to suffer increasing brand damage. And it is unusual to have a seriously wealthy rich lister with a philanthropic bent who's spending money, who's taking them on. And I'm signalling, I guess, to you now that I think that you'll see more and more of this happening over the coming years. And I think Woolies should be getting out of that space. Tabcorp was at their AGM 2 weeks ago. Paul gave me all the questions to ask. I got the CEO to basically commit that he agrees they shouldn't have children in pokies venues. And that's now up on the web, and we're following through with that. I think Tabcorp is a good example of, and Tattersalls, of companies that were pretty arrogant. They had a government licence to run poker machines. The CEO of Tattersalls was quoted saying, we're just going to screw the problem gamblers until we're made to stop. There was a big scandal around David White and lobbying, grubby lobbying to get renewals of licences. And the Labor Party came along and just said, bang, your licences are over, we're not renewing them, and we're not paying $1.2 billion of compensation. Massive damage to shareholders. Shares fell by 30%. And my argument is that they wouldn't have imperiled their franchise like they did if they'd behaved more responsibly, if they'd been seen as a good corporate citizen, rather than a group of companies that just ran irresponsible practices, made inordinate amounts of money, had massive payouts to executives. You know, Tabcorp had a couple of CEO option issues withdrawn because they were voted down by shareholders. And just the government said, well, there's no sympathy for them. Look at how they run their businesses. Didn't care about ripping up $1.2 billion of value. So they mishandled their franchise. AWB, I was at the shareholders meeting last week where the chairman actually broke down in tears at the end of his speech. An interesting case study of basically a gerrymandered board where 9 of the 11 directors had to be farmers, where a special deal was done with John Anderson persuading the stock exchange to slacken off their rules on one vote, one value. So we had a ridiculously gerrymandered board, a legislative monopoly, a bunch of directors who are asleep on their tractors, and the management goes off and slips $300 million to Saddam Hussein in the greatest corruption scandal or bribery scandal in Australian history. Unbelievably, the board then went into the coal inquiry after being exposed in the Volcker inquiry and fought it. They took it on. They tried to dispute it. When clearly where their brand damage was at, it should have been mea culpa, we've sacked the management, we're going to renew. And they went through a tortuous process of just getting slowly skewered day after day after day. And then eventually the chairman, Brendan Stewart, got a new managing director in, and the new managing director, because the old guy was being charged, the new managing director said, we've got to change this. And then the chairman became a champion for constitutional reform. And he ran the campaign very bravely to throw the farmers off the board. And when he broke down in tears last week at the meeting, it was after shareholders had approved the new constitution where they'd implemented the 150 governance recommendations by KPMG. He'd been ostracised in his hometown and it had been a really tough fight for him. But he'd seen the light, belatedly, after the company had been trashed fighting their way through the coal inquiry. And now AWB is on the right track. After they sacked the farmers, the shares rose 10% within 2 days, because it could now be taken over. It wasn't a farmer gerrymander. And it's actually fixing itself now. It's done the right thing, and they're on the way back. Rio Tinto, interesting that the Norwegian sovereign fund sold out of Rio the other week at more than $100 a share, raising about $1 billion, because they screened the company negatively over the Freeport-McMoRan giant copper mine in Indonesia. I haven't ever seen a big Australian fund take a brave position like that, but that is where it's going, that big companies are going to increasingly get screened and have high-profile boycotts on being on their register based on their practices. Overall, I'd say about the corporate practices in Australia is that overall we've actually been pretty good. Can anyone ever remember a sweatshop scandal involving an Australian public company? I mean, arguably, you know, we weren't very entrepreneurial. It was Phil Knight out of Oregon and Nike doing all the sweatshop scandals in Asia. We're on the footsteps of Asia here, yet there's been no corporate Australian company that's ever been done over publicly being in there, paying $8 an hour, this sort of thing. So partly because of our transparency, our wealth, the lack of a need to really go and do that, I guess the fact that so many of our big corporates are sort of inwardly focused service economies, we don't have that many great companies that are up there manufacturing much in Asia, is some of the reasons why we haven't had that sort of scandal. So I'd argue that overall we've actually been reasonably well served in terms of the corporate behaviour in Australia. I think there is going to be an increasingly large issue as we talk about business ethics around monopolies and around abuse of market positions. Australians traditionally don't like a middleman, don't like having the ticket clipped by someone abusing their power. We're anti-authoritarian, dating back to the convict days. Yet I'd argue we have the most concentrated corporate sector in the world in a, you know, supposedly competition-focused democracy. And the likes of, you know, what Macquarie Airports has done in checking up the fees over the Sydney Airport monopoly, Computershare's monopoly, Toll and Patrick, particularly the big banks, the power of our big banks. Australians suffer the world's most expensive banking system, in part just because of the sheer pricing power that the big four banks have in our market. ASX itself has produced a 300-fold return for the lucky 626 stockbrokers who owned it when it demutualised, just clips the ticket on a monopoly. Qantas, 60% market share. Yeah, it's great. It's the most profitable airline in the world. It's partly about market power. Telstra, the same, most integrated telco in the world. Again, market power. Westfield, massively dominant in shopping centres. And now BHP and Rio. BHP wants to buy Rio Tinto and create an incredibly powerful player in things like iron ore. And even the free-to-air oligopoly in TV. I mean, at the Austar AGM the other week, the CEO said, you know, Australian free-to-air is the most protected oligopoly in the world. I mean, it was a bit of an overblown statement, but too much of the Australian sort of success story has been around getting privileged market positions, concessions handed out by governments. Woolworths and Coles, 80% of the dry grocery market. It's no surprise Woolies shares have gone from $3 to $25. It's just massive pricing power, unprecedented anywhere in the world. And I think you will increasingly see a backlash against that, particularly as everyone else is hurting. So when the chaos of the crisis dies down, people will look around at who's standing and they'll say, well, you know, Telstra, Qantas, ASX, the big banks, Woolies, Coles, they've all got amazingly privileged market power positions and we're not going to take it anymore as customers who are, in their view, getting gouged by those positions. So I think that's one to watch. But I think the big one is the greed factor and the business ethics factor. And what we've seen in the last 2 weeks in Australia has been utterly unprecedented, where we've seen a number of massive protest votes against remuneration reports and a couple of unprecedented protests against individual directors. And this is where it's going, where at last the institutional investors are rising up, particularly through umbrella groups such as Axie, and they're not going to take it anymore. And you're seeing increasing votes. So Boral, last week, I was up in Sydney last Friday for the AGM, and it was an interesting situation where the chairman, Ken Moss, the first question I said was, well, Chairman, you've been here for 9 years. You'll have done 10 years by the time we get to next year's AGM. Are you planning to run for another term? You know, the John Howard question. Yes, I am. Chairman, the fact that you were one of the GPT directors who recommended the Babcock deal and you've just blown up $3 billion there, and you were one of the NAB directors when they blew up all that money at Homeside and the Forex scandals, Do you think that maybe another 3 years at Boral is perhaps inappropriate? Oh, no, not at all. It's got nothing to do with it, etc., etc. Then we had a profit downgrade from Boral, and the CEO, whose pay had gone from $4.8 million to $5.8 million, increase in short-term bonus and base pay. Share price tanked 10% on the day, profit warning, 58% vote against the remuneration report. So a prediction I'll make to you is that Ken Moss won't run for election next year, that there will be a big protest against him if he does run next year, and he's partly got to take responsibility for what happened with the REM report, but also I don't think you're going to see directors getting away with blowing up billions over here and then seeking another term over here. And what we saw on Tuesday night this week at Transurban was a demonstration of that, where the chairman, David Ryan, had a record 34% vote against his re-election. Now, that's the biggest ever against vote of an incumbent chairman of an ASX 100 company. What was David Ryan's sin? Well, he was the chairman of ABC Learning, and he was the chairman of the Audit Committee for the last 4 years. So he got up and did his sort of mea culpa at the start of the meeting, saying, oh, the press have been saying all these terrible things about me, and I'm not going to talk about ABC Learning. I can't talk about it, but don't believe the rumour and innuendo. And I got up and spoke against him and said, well, I don't know if it's rumour and innuendo, but the stock's been suspended for 2 weeks. You claim the market cap's $2.4 billion, the actual market cap's $300 million. You seem to have lost a couple of billion dollars. You've just declared a loss of $437 million, and your accounts are inaccurate, and you've had a myriad amount of related party transactions over the years involving all sorts of different parts of the business that haven't been properly disclosed, and you were the chairman of the Audit Committee. Where's the rumour? They're the facts. And he stood stoically there, I won another 3 years at Transurban. And this is a guy who got margin called out of his entire stake in ABC Learning. And I said to him, if you can't manage your own finances to the point of an establishment director not getting margin called, how can you present yourself here to manage a $6.6 billion company? No confidence in you whatsoever. And he just stood there, and the reaction afterwards from the shareholders was very positive, and I make a prediction that I don't think he'll be there by Christmas. And even one of the directors on the quiet said that to me afterwards as well. So I think we will see more accountability there. I think it was a very good innovation to bring in the non-binding vote on remuneration reports 4 or 5 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, which Costello did. It was a terrific innovation. And the market's been working pretty well on remuneration reports. Telstra went over the top with Sol Trujillo, got a 66% against vote, changed their policy. The more interesting fight was probably when Macquarie Bank got a 21.5% vote against their remuneration report last year after a very big proxy struggle with Risk Metrics, the proxy advisory firm that said vote against Macquarie's REM report because 70% of the bonus is paid as cash short term. So there's too much cash going out of the business. There's not enough long term alignment. Macquarie fought it. This has been our system since 1971. Why change the winning formula, etc., etc.? After the protest vote, the next year, the chairman of the remuneration report was going to be up for election. That was going to be a showdown based on refusing to heed the message on REM report. When Nick Moore got the job, they changed. And now a majority of the bonuses for the top executives will be paid in the form of stock that must be held for 3 years. So you have proper alignment. So this was a major achievement. I mean, I came up with the nickname Millionaire's Factory back in 97. I supported them. It's been a great success story, but if you look back at it now, 70% short-term cash bonuses was inappropriate. We'd have all been a lot better off if Alan Moss had received $20 million worth of stock at $90 last year rather than $20 million worth of cash for his bonus, which he's now just got in his back pocket and isn't feeling any pain with the stock now down sort of in the high 20s. We had another protest vote, the two Packer vehicles the other day, 2 days ago, Consolidated Media Holdings, 25% against vote on the remuneration report. John Alexander, the chairman, got a $15 million payout when they did the demerger with Crown. And at the Crown meeting itself, if you strip out the Packer shareholding, John Alexander was 50-50 on his own re-election. So you got a payout, you're an insider. Big protest vote from the neutral shareholders. I love the James Packer response when asked to explain this. He goes, no, it's 75% in favour. I said, well, take your shares out, it's 50-50. Are you heeding it? The votes are the votes. He said, in other words, I control this company, get stuffed. Oz Minerals was another classic where you have to get... They put up a resolution for our lunchtime speaker, Owen Hegarty, to get a $10.4 million payout as part of the merger with Zinifex. About half of this was based on options that hadn't been issued, And the board made an assumption that the Oz Minerals share price would go north of $6 by 2010, 2011, when those options would vest, and the proposed a $10.7 million payout. It was voted down by shareholders, 60% voted down, and the board just turned around and gave him $8.5 million in cash anyway. Now, the government, I predict, in the next 4 weeks will announce new laws on termination payouts for executives, rather than the payout being having to have shareholder approval if it is seven times the last 3 years' average salary. The new law will be something like anything over $1 million and you've got to get shareholder approval. That should be called the Owen Hegarty Amendment when that one actually comes through. And we had a nice connection to all this Oz Minerals thing this morning at Toll, where when they did the demerger with Asciano last year, the costs of the demerger were $80 million. So I got up at the start of the meeting and said to Paul Little, that demerger didn't work too well. We probably should have sold Pacific National instead rather than demerge. What was the $80 million cost all about? You know, huge amount of money to spend on a demerger. What was it all about? Oh, I can't remember. I haven't got the detail. So later on, when the remuneration report came up, I got up and said, well, actually, I'll remind you, Paul, $55 million of that, i.e. the majority, was actually paid buying out options for executives. 390 executives shared in $55 million. You got $8.5 million. And I said, what were the assumptions around that calculation, that 390 executives should get a one-off cash payout of unissued or unvested options dating over the next 3 years? Oh, I haven't got the details to hand, you know, but you know, it was recommended by an independent expert. So I then said, well, actually, I've got a report here from Risk Metrics, which has been leaked to me by one of your large shareholders who's very upset about this. And you've been having a lot of discussions with Risk Metrics, haven't you, over the last few weeks? And you provide a lot of information to Risk Metrics, haven't you? Are you aware of this report? Oh, look, we've had some talk, but we disagree with Risk Metrics. I said, right, well, tell me, Risk Metrics says in this report that in calculating that $55 million figure, you assumed earnings per share growth over the next 3 years of 24% year on year. Is that right? Oh, I can't remember the figures, haven't got the figures. And in fact, you recommended that 88% of all of these unoption issues be treated as being fully vested and you've achieved all hurdles. Is that correct? That's what the report says. Oh, look, I haven't got the details. Now, is it true also that you've actually assumed the share price got to between $30 and $40 by 2011 to calculate this figure, didn't you? That was the assumption. 25% EPS growth every year, share price around the $35 mark. Today, the combined share price of Asciano and Toll is $7.92. So you have showered $55 million of our cash on the executive class at Toll and Asciano on pieces of paper and options that are worthless, that have negative value. Why have you done that? Oh, well, we had independent experts reported. Did you think about getting a second opinion from KPMG, your auditor, when they gave you this advice that this was absolutely fine to do this? No, no, we just took the advice. And then I said, well, you know, at Asciano last week, the CEO agreed to pay back $750,000 of his bonus because it miscalculated on the options. I suggest that we start talking about $20 or $30 million coming back from this payment. And then I moved that the shareholders vote down the remuneration report. So we got a majority from the floor. We called for a poll. So the public record will show shareholders vote down remuneration report at the meeting. And then the proxies were 50-50 on the REM report if you take out Paul Little's shareholding, which is 10%. And because the chairman, Ray Horsburgh, was so incompetent in just fudging and stonewalling and pretending he knew nothing, I then got up on his re-election next and said, and we should vote down the chairman as well because he's been incompetent today. And that was 50-50 from the floor. And Little, the CEO who chaired the resolution, of course, it should be the next most senior independent director who should be chairing the resolution, not the CEO, tried to shut me down and then declared it passed, even though it was 50-50 from the floor. Now, I think because all this information is going to be on the public record, because Toll gave all of the internal assumptions to Risk Metrics and they've now put it out there, I think this will be a major turning point in terms of executive largesse, because it's so outrageous and there was so poor disclosure and the board was so inept in stepping in and doing something. And I told them to their face, I said, I think you will get sued. Your shareholders will take action. to recover 30, 40 million of this, because it's just outrageous that you've done it. And this is where the independent directors have got to step up. And then I said, and of course, it's not comforting to have the chairman of Oz Minerals, Barry Cusack, the bloke who did the $8.5 million cash payout to Owen after shareholders rejected the $10.7 million, sitting on the toll board as well. So it was a pretty comprehensive sort of expose on, and you know, they were pretty much floundering, and you will see a lot of press around this tomorrow, and I think that there will be, it will be a bit of a turning point in what has been a quite remarkable two-week period of shareholders saying they're not going to take it. I mean, Biota had an options issue for the CEO knocked back yesterday. Suncor had another big protest vote against their remuneration report. So there's a lot of movement, and I think the whole reaction against executive greed is going to be pretty profound, and we're seeing it already. At Transurban, the last CEO got a $16.6 million payout last year. The remuneration report was defeated on Monday night by 56 to 44 or something like that. So we're seeing remuneration reports get defeated. We're going to see directors get defeated. Barry Cusack is up for election next week at McMahon Holdings, and Risk Metrics have recommended against him at McMahon Holdings on the basis that he treated our shareholders with such contempt at Oz Minerals, we don't trust him anywhere. So he's going to have a tough vote, and I think you're going to need to see that. You're going to need to see a couple of directors actually thrown off boards, and the whole Ken Moss issue of just because I lost $3 billion over here doesn't mean you should punish me at Boral. I think that's the thing that's got to change. And I'll give two final examples about where the problem is with that is that Stan Wallace was the chairman of AMP when they lost $10 billion. In the UK in the early 2000s. He's still on the board of AFIC, Australia's biggest investment company, re-elected last year with 96% in favour. Gerry Ellis was the chairman of BHP in the late 90s when they wrote off $5 to $10 billion. Still on the ANZ board today after 16 years. Chairman of the Risk Committee, at the age of 71. I mean, is anyone surprised about Opus Prime when the guy who should have been struck off after blowing up billions at BHP is still hanging around the Directors Club? So for mine, I think those things have got to change. We've got to start deepening the gene pool amongst the directors and getting some accountability. And I'm really excited that we are seeing it like never before over the last 2 weeks. And I think there'll be more to come, and there'll be legislative backup from Labor, who has no sympathy for corporate excess. And I think issues like Woolies ripping off gambling addicts will also get grouped into that category of corporate greed. Woolies doesn't need to drain hundreds of millions of dollars a year out of pokey addicts in Victoria. They shouldn't be doing that. And I think you'll see that get grouped in with the whole greed thing. It'll be corporate greed as opposed to just, your practice is just greedy and damaging and dangerous, as opposed to just, he got paid too much, he got a big payout as well. So I think it's an exciting time for accountability from a shareholder point of view. I think the whole ESG thing is very strong, but I think that, you know, joining carbon trading and socially responsible, and, you know, being a good employer and being able to attract Gen Y employees, that thrown in there top of that category now will just be the straight business ethics corporate greed situation, and you're going to see that play out around the world. And we saw a very interesting example this morning 100 metres up the road at the Park Hyatt with Toll. So thanks for listening, and I think we're taking some questions now.